Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Always nice to be able to share positive insights into the human condition, how we can live longer, happier, and healthier lives. Today, we begin with a study from Mutaw University in Jordan. And it talks about rosemary, peppermint oil, how to enhance your memory in this particular model for Alzheimer's disease. This was published in the peer reviewed journal Nutrients. And what it found was that there were substantial improvements in memory and an increase in a marker of neurogenesis, meaning the formation of new neurons in rats with a condition similar to Alzheimer's disease that received extracts of rosemary and or peppermint oil. The study included groups of rats that received a low or high two dose of rosemary oil extract or a low or high two dose of peppermint extract. The low-dose mixture of rosemary and peppermint oil extract, or high-dose mixture of the extracts. And they showed improvements in all the tests of memory compared with saline solution or your placebo. And that brings me to something that we almost never discuss in our society, and that is aromatherapy. Now, there was a time back in the 1970s and 80s where aromatherapy was very popular. In fact, I can remember being asked, we had a colonic room in our Tri-State Healing Center. We had a holistic dentistry, acupuncture. We had a whole de-stress, natural approaches, stress meditation room, plus, of course, two big drip rooms. And we served thousands of people the best alternative therapy we could. No orthodox medicine was ever given, and yet all the physicians and all the staff, 22 medical staff, were all orthodox, board certified. So it should have been something of interest. We should have seen people saying, hey, what are you doing? You have an open door policy. You allow people to speak with your patients and talk with the medical staff. What are you doing to help lower blood pressure and lower cholesterol and help lower the markers of C-reactive protein and homocysteine and fibrinogen, all of which will show an increased risk in stroke or heart attack? And indeed, a few people came. And guess who the primary people came? This you might find of interest. African-American physicians. Yes, we had dozens come over the period of the years. And they, more often than not, were interested in cancer, and how we dealt with sickle cell anemia and AIDS. In fact, word got around the New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco AIDS community, especially the support groups, that, hey, they're doing something without using AZT, DDI, DDC protease inhibitors, or the toxic antiretroviral drugs, which were causing iatrogenic deaths. We estimate that about 300,000 individuals who were HIV positive but otherwise healthy, died because they took drugs which just destroyed their immune system. And that was unfortunate, but we didn't do that. To the contrary, I created protocols. I created all the protocols for everyone. And then I would show the staff, based upon the peer review literature off the Library of Medicine, why I had selected a certain dose of something, why they were drinking bitter melon juice. Bitter melon, what's that? I was told. And then I would show them that this was very common, as were other fruits, vegetables, herbs from the southern hemisphere. They use those commonly. But then someone one day came in and said that they were from Switzerland. They didn't have AIDS. And they wanted to know, did we use aromatherapy? And we didn't. Yes. We would suggest that people put two or three drops of lavender on their pillow to help them go to sleep, and that's been proven correct. And also some of the other oils will help take you out of a stressful situation. A rescue remedy, for example, and some of the homeopathics. But we didn't have a specific place where people go, so we made one. We made a little booth at the back of the center, and in that booth, you could go in, and for 20 minutes, you would inhale essential oils. And people would cough, and they'd cough up all kinds of phlegm and tartar and black muck from their lungs. And it was very popular. And so then we started advocating it, and for them to get little misters at home where you put you have water in it and you put your oils in it, and then you turn it on and it vaporizes the room. And all of us had one on our desks. So just a takeaway message, yes, these have been shown now in a very good study published in a peer-reviewed journal to actually deal with the rosemary and peppermint. Remember, the two oils showed an increase in hippocampal levels of brain-derived neurotrophic factor, what is called BDNF. That's a protein that helps prevent the death of brain cells and induce a new neuron growth in the hippocampus. But haven't we been told the heart can't grow new, the kidneys can't grow, the brain can't grow, the eyes can't grow, the lungs can't grow, so when you've destroyed them, they're destroyed forever. That's not true. We can show new dendrites. We can show the new neurons in the brain. So neuroscience has progressed to where we're at a point where we can, with almost all the organs of the body, stimulate healing processes that were unheard of just 5 years ago. We're moving at a very accelerated rate. So just one more thing to help your memory and learning, especially if you're suffering from long COVID. Why? One of the conditions of suffering from long COVID is the loss of memory. In fact, it can be so acute that someone in their 20s who had COVID and now has long COVID, many of the symptoms are still there, adversely affecting their energy. They have to sleep a lot. They don't have the strength. They don't have the energy to go and exercise. Really adversely affects quality of life. Members of my family, my close friends, suffer from long COVID. So I have a protocol for them now, and I'm not giving it today because it's really long. It takes 4 hours. You heard me right, 4 hours to go over the full protocol, but some remarkable improvements. And I'm seeing people who are 30, but their brain activity is that of like a 80-year-old. So this is really serious. So we want to be able to detoxify, and you start with detoxifying the hippocampus, improving memory, improving cognition, improving learning from something as simple as two oils, all right, two oils. Now, you've all heard, I'm sure most of you have heard of what is called robust targets, the what are called the adipocytes and obesity-associated inflammation. A little technical, comes from the University of Clermont in France. What it comes down to in lay language is that excess weight and obesity are the fifth leading cause of death globally. And in America, we have more obesity and morbid obesity, I mean really overweight, per population than any other country in the world. And that includes China and India. They both have more or less about 1.4 billion people. We have about 332 million. Yet we have more obese children and adults and senior citizens. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and I'm not going to go into those now. But just all that excess weight speeds up the death process. And I've explained how on previous programs. You put too much pressure upon the heart. Remember, your heart is not that big. It's like the more or less the size of a softball. But you could be gaining weight, and the heart doesn't gain weight and grow in proportion to your weight. So it has to pump harder. And pumping harder means you're raising your beats per minute. This is important, very important. Every day, not with your neck, never take your pulse with your carotid artery, but rather with your wrist. Gently touch the outside. If you're watching right now, right here is where you touch. And just count for 60 seconds. Have a stopwatch. And right now I have a stopwatch right here. So I'll count. And my beats, and also my physician, I just had a physical yesterday, it was 49 beats per minute. And the nurse said, well, that's strange. I said, no, I'm an ultra marathoner. Oh, okay. Well, then that's normal. And to have a lower pulse. And also to have lower blood pressure. And to have lower blood sugar levels. Now, all three of those, a lower pulse, a lower blood pressure, and a lower blood sugar will allow you to be less susceptible to to heart attacks and strokes. Doesn't mean you can't have one. It means you're far less susceptible. But the big thing is being overweight. And yet we are a society that prides ourselves in the big person, right? Generally, it's the big man. And then you, you see. And in fact, in my hometown, there were a group of us that worked out together. We didn't have a gym. It had closed, a YMCA. So we worked out in just a garage, lifting weights. We were power lifters, not bodybuilders. Yeah, we had, you know, strong, muscular bodies. It was easy to tell because when you're bulking up, and I was the smallest guy there, 6'2", 236 pounds, same waist I have today. And yet I had this massive amount of legs, and that you can see in some of the earlier photographs, and that's really helped me throughout my life. And also my upper chest and arms. And you forgot people's names, you know, instead, this is true. Instead, we say Big Jim, 285, John, 263. Everyone knew everyone's weight and first name. We never talked about anyone's last name because you were known for being big, right? And big was powerful. And so a lot of guys were big simply because they overate. Yeah, they had a big belly. You know, they were morbidly obese. But that wasn't considered negative. That was considered positive. The guys who were thin were considered, you're too skinny. Eat something. And of course, since you have friends that are Italian American, which I did, the Leotti family among others, and Bersotti family, and the Rock family, etc. Well, not the Rocks, they were Syrian Americans. But you go over there, and you've never seen that amount of food in your life, like a 10-course meal. And you're expected to eat it all. You know, don't leave anything on your plate. People are starving in China. And I never got. But this is the ways we, I'm sure I'm not the only one whose parents says, someone's starving in the world, so you eat everything on your plate. And we didn't think that being trim was a good thing. We thought being heavy was strength. It was a myth. It was killing people and would later be a primary cause of premature death. So one of the first things I try to do in anyone that I counsel is get the weight off without crash dieting in a healthy way through systematic but modified fasting, lots of juices, because a lot of what people are going to learn to lose initially is water weight. In fact, most of what you're going to lose is water weight because the basic chemistry of the body is 3,500 calories less than what you require, you lose a pound. 3,500 calories more than what you need, you gain a pound, but it's cumulative. So if you only had 100 extra calories a day, that means that in a period of a year, well, you've got a lot of extra calories and you've gained some weight. So it's deceptive, and that's why snacks are one of the worst things you can do because people almost always eat unhealthy snacks. And that's why we suggest don't eat anything after your last meal at night. It's that constant need to chew and then something soft and sweet, bad. Something salty and crunchy, bad. In any case, the whole idea is that you want to trim down, but do it in a healthy way. So what is the object of the exercise? It's that when we're gaining weight more than what our body should be, we're almost always gaining it from unhealthy habits. We're creating toxification of our body, or what is known as autotoxemia. We're depleting the good bacteria in our gut, which directly impacts our immune system. And we're loading it up with sugars, alcohol, refined carbohydrates, putrefying meats. I just saw an ad for prime-aged meats. What's a prime-aged meat? Well, because when you go to cut it, it cuts easy. Okay, so isn't it better to have something primed aged, easy to eat? Must be healthier. No. In point of fact, anytime you see the word primed aged meat, it means that the meat is rotting. They can change the temperature on these gigantic long trolleys where they take a carcass of an animal from one room at one temperature, low temperature, cold, and take it into a warmer room. And when you do that, the bacteria and the blood that's left in the cells, which is most of it, it begins to go morbid. It's very toxic, and it speeds up the decomposition, just like anything else that's dead, it decomposes. And so at a certain point, when the meat is soft enough for a lot of people to enjoy eating it with ease without chewing and chewing and chewing, that means it's really, really unhealthy. And yet we don't know that. So we think prime aged, that's good. No, prime aged is not good. It just means it's rotten flesh that is decaying. And now you're going to make it something it's not. In any case, what we need to do is we need to focus upon polyphenols and flavonoids. Where do you get that? Well, you get it in plants, and one of those consumed is a tea, and it's a very healthy tea. Let me spell it for you. R-O-O-I-B-O-S. Increasingly being investigated for positive effects on various health issues, including inflammation. It turns off inflammation. Now, it just doesn't turn off inflammation in your knees, your ankles, your wrist, your back. It turns off inflammation throughout your entire body. And so the aim of the study that I'm referring to was to examine the effects of the tea extract on obesity and associated low-grade chronic inflammation that comes when you are overweight. What are called cytokine secretions and macrophage polarizations and the differentiation of human adipocytes through the development of this whole biochemistry. And the tea worked. In plain lay language, it helped turn off the production of pro-inflammatory cytokines in the human leukocytes that helps your body prevent disease. That's simple, okay? Next up, a study from the University of Miami. Exercise can slow brain aging by, ready for this, 10 years for people who are a little older. That's a big deal. So in lay language, exercise in older people is associated with a slower rate of decline in thinking skills that occur with aging, or with what is called normal aging. It's actually premature aging. People who reported light to no exercise experienced a decline equal to 10 more years of aging as compared to people who reported moderate to intense exercise, according to a population-based observational study published in Neurology, the medical journal of the American Academy of Neurology. I try to motivate people to exercise. The older they get, the more you need that exercise. And especially people who have the beginning or some form of dementia. I won't mention any names, of course, but there are some very well-known people. All of you would know these people. And because they're exercising, even something that they wouldn't have done before, walking, 3 miles every morning. That's not the only thing, but that's very important. Suddenly, I'm hearing from them and their spouses or caregivers, there's a difference. They seem more alert. They don't walk into a room and look around with a glaze over their eyes. What am I doing here? Where am I at? Their cognition is returning. Is that possible? The answer is yes. Yes. But it also works in reverse. Those of you who've chosen not to exercise, then you're aging about 10 years faster at the chromosomal level than you otherwise would. So, exercise, calisthenics, aerobics, jogging, walking, power walking, swimming, they all matter. So you choose the one you feel best at doing, but you got to do it on a daily basis, because otherwise you're facing a greater cognitive impairment. That's the latest on health and healing. And by the way, you can also get your probiotics from pears. Didn't know that before. Yeah, the antioxidants, phenols, and pears can balance gut microbiome as well as manage early stage type 2 diabetes and hypertension. One good fruit to have if you have prediabetes or diabetes. You can go to Gary Nall on Rumble and on Odyssey, on YouTube, and get the Classroom on the Air. Today, the Classroom on the Air is going to be on the five harmonizing energies and why It really makes a difference if you're going to succeed at everything in life, from love to health to success. You got to have these energies working on your behalf. Plus, I have a brand new commentary coming, hopefully tomorrow, but certainly within the next couple of days. It's entitled, We've Crossed the Rubicon and We're Not Coming Back in Our Lifetimes. What's that mean? You'll have to listen to the commentary. It'll take the entire hour to do the commentary. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Tonight, 7 p.m., one of America's foremost constitutional attorneys, John Whitehead, he is a civil rights attorney. He has debated and practiced widely in the area of constitutional law and human rights for the persecuted and the oppressed and the downtrodden. In 1982, founded the Rutherford Institute, it's a civil liberties and human rights organization headquartered in Charlottesville, Virginia. And we're going to talk about what is happening today by our government and its agencies that we should not allow. He's going to go into great depth about the violations that we are either not aware of or aware of and don't think it matters. It does. So you won't want to miss tonight's discussion with, he's right there with Danny Sheehan and some of the other best of the best. That's it tonight at 7 p.m. PRN.live, Progressive Commentary Hour. Now, yesterday I started to share with you information that hitherto the average American is unaware of. And the reason they're unaware of it, because who controls the narrative? And those in power control the narrative. Whether it's Democrat or Republican is irrelevant. And unfortunately, there's no transparency anywhere. They lie constantly. Just give you one example. I'm sure many of you saw Joe Biden outside of the lecture he had just done for the Council on Foreign Relations. And he talked about how he went over on a mission to Ukraine, and he told the president of Ukraine, well, I'm going to leave here in 6 hours, but if that attorney general is still there with his job, you're not getting $1 billion. And then he said, in SOB, he fired the attorney general. So he got his billion. Here's what none of the media told you, and they should have. Here's what any intrepid investigative journalist would have found out very quickly. We made a few phone calls and found out. What was the attorney general that he wanted to get fired who was fired? What was his problem? Well, in point of fact, he had no problem. He was considered an exemplar in the area of being fair and just. But he was investigating the oil company that had hired Biden's son and Hunter Biden and was giving him, the money was from $50,000 to $80,000 a month. Now, here's what's important. Biden publicly stated he got the guy fired. He also stated for getting him fired, they gave Ukraine $1 billion. The man was investigating the corruption of Hunter Biden with Burisma, the corporation run by an oligarch that had brought Hunter Biden on, who had no experience at all of any kind. He was qualified for nothing for which he was paid. Wouldn't you think that the second part of what I just told you would be important? It shows pay to play. It shows using a person's office as vice president to enrich his son. And now we're seeing with all these checks coming out only because they've been brought before committees and records have been subpoenaed, that money was spread to all of the Bidens, all of them, for doing what? And that's what they're finding out now. Why wouldn't you want that part of a story told? Because then someone was going to say, but you've repeatedly said that you didn't know what your son's business was, you had nothing to do it, nor him, you. And yet here are all these pictures, and here are all four different people that were partners with your family, your son's businesses, all saying just the opposite. You were the big man, the 10% that was held for. Even a majority of Democrats said, had they known this before the last election, they would not have voted for Joe Biden. So why can't we have that conversation? Look not at the emotions that people feel, their allegiance, just look at the facts. So almost everything that has been said that has been true and scientific for the past 3 years concerning COVID has been shown now to be disinformation, misinformation, lies. But no one, not a single person, has acknowledged they were wrong, apologize. They're doubling down. Keep getting vaccinated. Get your kid vaccinated. That goes against all science. That means that they're wanting to profit off of a condition that does not kill children, unless they have a comorbidity, or young people at all. And now we have an epidemic of unexplained deaths. And we've looked for all the answers, and we find that at every turn, every governmental agency, the National Institutes of Health, U.S. Public Health Service, which is the umbrella over all these, the Anthony Fauci's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the CDC, the FDA, the Department of Defense, they've all lied. They are completely controlled. The World Health Organization lied, controlled. But how would you know that? You wouldn't. Unless you had access to what was going on behind the scenes. Why is it that if, even today, this is 2 days in a row, YouTube took stuff off the channel because they said it couldn't be, it was scientifically in misinformation. In point of fact, it was completely accurate on vaccines. But this is from years ago, I did these films. But now anything where the word COVID or vaccines are mentioned, they're going to cancel you. But if you mention this, someone would say, well, you're just a conspiracy theorist. This is nonsense. Twitter has shown us all the emails, hundreds of thousands of emails. And in those emails, now congressional committees are bringing people forth and saying, did the White House pressure anyone, threaten them? No. Well, here's the actual email threatening the New York Times. And were there any meetings? No, I don't recall any. No, there were thousands of meetings all the time. Eight or more FBI agents were actually working inside of Twitter, screening everything. And then so too Facebook, so too Google. Everything was being controlled by the deep state, the people in control of the deep state. You didn't know it. Now you do. And we're going to continue that now. Plus, in a few moments, not the first one, but in a few moments, we're going to play you a clip from two of the most dynamic members of the European Union. And they're on a special committee to investigate COVID and its statistics for death and disability. One of them's a medical doctor, this very strong woman. I mean, she has a dynamic presence and she lets it rip. Then after that, you'll hear the excuses being made that, well, I don't know those figures, how many are dead, and I, you should. You're the head. Why don't you know that? And then they say, well, the 20 million people are alive because of an article in Lancet says so. Really? I don't read the Lancet anymore. I don't trust anything in it. The British Medical Journal I do, but not the Lancet. So our scholar in residence, Richard Gale, is going to come on and make a challenge. I would suggest that someone record what Richard's saying and send it to the members of that committee at the European Union. I believe that if it's really documented, which it will be, and we've completely deconstructed what they've said in Lancet, then there's absolutely no proof of their claims. But why can't other people do this? Because the social media would not allow this information to get out to you. But here's something that is now out. This is Kat Kamak, C-A-M-M-A-C-K, member of Congress in the House, at a hearing. And she is stunned by the Democratic witness's response at weaponization of committee hearings. It's short, but it shows you what actually goes on when people have an opportunity to bring in topics and individuals under oath. Because for the last 14 years, the heads of the House and the head of the Senate have been controlled by Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, and they won't allow these committees to convene. I'll give you one example, and this is about to change, hopefully in the very near future. I'm sure many of the people listening have heard me discuss the politics of a vaccination, and there is no such thing as a safe and effective vaccine. In fact, that's actually supported by the U.S. Supreme Court, saying all vaccines are inherently dangerous. Now, a member of the CDC, William Thompson, was a part of a conspiracy, and he named all the names, of hiding the true impact of a study showing that the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, was causing a huge increase over, I think it was 324% increase in autism spectrum disorder in young boys. And these young boys were getting autism at a huge rate. And these were African Americans, young males, 36 months and younger. So imagine this. Imagine the Black Caucus. Imagine Black members of the Senate and the House. They refused, when presented this information, to hold a hearing and bring Dr. Thompson in, and let him testify under oath. Yes, we covered up a crime against humanity. Yes, we manipulated the figures. Yes, we lied to Congress. We lied to the scientific community. We lied to everyone. And everyone from the top of the CDC down, and we even took all of their records and put all the records into bags to destroy them. Oh, except I didn't. I kept one. And those records went to Representative Posey of Florida. And this was all done because of one doctor whose son had autism who was communicating for Freedom of Information with Thompson, which is never done. They just send out, you know, you want a request for something, we'll give it to you, redacted or not. But Thompson got on the line, was talking to him. And the moment in these conversations, he started talking about the cover-up, his phone calls were recorded. We put those phone calls in the last two documentaries I've done on vaccines. We've played them on this program. And then when the CDC found out, they gave him a big promotion and he became an official whistleblower. He'll be subpoenaed. Everyone's going to be subpoenaed. Why haven't there been a single hearing in all these years? Do you remember Anderson Cooper and Dr. Gupta attacking Dr. Andrew Wakefield? Because he also suggested that they should look more carefully at the MMR vaccine and maybe give it to the M vaccine by itself, each by itself. And they were just excoriated, lost their license, and were ridiculed. That was during the same period of time with the same data. In the United States, same data and findings, what they were having in Europe. Now, had that information become public, then Andrew Wakefield would have been a hero, as well as all the other epidemiologists and gastroenterologists who were part of his team. But instead, all their reputations were destroyed. So just imagine, so we ask a basic question. How many African-American young children have developed autism because of the cover-up by our government, members of Congress, both sides? Over 100,000 minimal. So 100,000 young children now suffer from autism. Their parents are going to have to take care of them the rest of their life because of the lying of members of Congress. Now that they have some power to have these House hearings, now you're seeing an entirely different scenario of information coming at you. So what do the people in the Democratic Party do? They gather together and say, we're going to deny everything and attack anyone who does this. This is just one of those hearings, because I've been watching hearing after hearing after hearing after hearing and finding information we haven't had in 14 years. Here's just one example.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to our witnesses for appearing before us here today. I've heard your last name pronounced a couple of different ways today. How is it properly pronounced?
Seligman. Thank you very much.
Seligman?
Seligman.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Seligman, you stated you are an expert in constitutional law, correct?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. In your testimony, your written testimony, which was provided to us late last night, it says that, quote, this is your writing, no government official ever threatened any social media platform with adverse action if a platform declined to moderate content flagged by the official or if a platform decided not to take an official's suggestions. Do you stand by your testimony?
Yes.
Okay. Now, a few minutes ago, just prior, you said that members of the legislative branch don't qualify for this particular statement, despite the fact that you said no government official ever. Does a representative in Congress constitute a government official?
Well, let me clarify my testimony from earlier. I don't think that legislative proposals that were brought by Republicans or Democrats constitute threats against social media platforms. That's true whether with respect to Section 230 reform. It's
sure.
True with respect to antitrust enforcement.
So that would then lead us to the natural inclination to believe that you're talking about the executive branch, correct? Being government officials. So government officials like the deputy assistant to the president and director of digital strategy like Robert Flattery, or the White House senior advisor like Andrew Slavitt, or the NSC staffer Katie Kolas, or the deputy assistant to the president, or the White House digital director, or the press secretary for the first lady, or the NSC director for counterterrorism, the chief of staff for the Office of Digital Strategy, the director of strategic communication and engagement, the White House Associate Counsel, Associate Director for Communications, the Deputy Director of Digital Strategy, and the Strategic Director of Digital Communications, those are government officials, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And what's so interesting is that all of these members of the executive branch, all of them have communications, thousands of emails between them and Twitter and Meta officials where they demand that posts be taken down and censored. I'll give you a couple of examples. And then we'll see if you still feel so strongly about your words. January 23rd, 3 days after the inauguration, at 1:04 a.m., Clark Humphrey of the White House emails Twitter and says, "We're flagging this post for you. Hey, folks, wanted to flag this tweet, wondering if we can get moving on the process to have it taken down, ASAP. Then, on February 7th, an email exchange took place between Twitter and White House Deputy Assistant to the President and Director of Digital Strategy, Rob Flattery, and asked for the steps that he could take to, quote, streamline the process for the White House's demands for Twitter censorship. Then 2 days later, on February 9th, 2021, he follows up again with Facebook with a more aggressive demand for more information, along with an accusation that would be repeated many times in the future, that Facebook was failing to censor speech on its platform, and it was causing, quote, political violence. Fast forward, you have March 15th, White House senior advisor then made an ominous statement threatening unspecified executive action against Facebook in retaliation for Facebook's perceived lack of cooperation with the White House's list of demands that have been documented and will be inserted into the record for this hearing, on censorship of, quote, borderline content. The line that I think is particularly troubling is saying, internally, we have been considering our options on what to do about it. Do you consider that to be non-threatening?
I'm not familiar with the particular documents that you're referring to.
I just read you multiple examples.
Yes, and so I don't think that emphatic expressions of the concern, their concerns about the problem of misinformation is a threat. I don't.
So when President Biden says that social media companies are killing people, and then there is a direct line from the White House to the social media companies demanding posts be removed, going so far as to say there has to be a quick and devastating takedown, a published takedown, that is not a threat?
I don't believe so.
Wow.
I also don't believe it
wow.
was a threat when President Trump made comments about social media.
I am so glad we have this on the record. Again, my apologies to you, sir, for what you've had to endure here today. But with that, I yield back.
Thank you. The gentlelady's time's expired.
Okay. What did you just learn for the first time? Names of people, their positions, threatening all of the social media companies, you take these people down or we will take you down. Mm-hmm. So when we write an article, when we write 74 articles challenging Wikipedia, when we write 27 articles challenging COVID, we write 14 articles challenging 5G, and you don't see them posted on any of these platforms, though they were put up, they're taken down because that's disinformation. I don't write disinformation ever. We go through a vetting process in my office unlike any that you've ever had. Started a long time ago when I was writing an article in 1971 against the cancer establishment, the entire cancer establishment, everyone in the cancer establishment, for either being negligent of how to help a person or therapies that they were being paid for that they knew were not going to help a person, and the corruption on how it was all this funding occurred. And a man who was the head general counsel of General Media, really brilliant lawyer, says, okay, Gary, we're going to get a Harvard Law Review person to work full time, and they had the final word, not you. If you can't prove that what you're saying is absolutely true, so if we get sued, we can defend it, because truth is its own defense, then that won't get published. 58 cover stories, didn't have to retract a single word because of this vetting. I do the same thing now with every single thing we do. So we're not giving disinformation. They are. We're not sharing ideologies to enhance power and prestige and profits. They are. Now you're seeing it. How do you handle that? How do you feel about that? How do you feel about being used like your unwitting tool that they're counting upon the average American, having no interest in looking for the truth, just accepting whatever their opinion leaders tell them, whether it's a Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or Rachel Maddow or the New York Times or the Washington Post? Now we have the truth, and it's just beginning. Because I believe, based upon conversations we've had, that there's going to be some hearings now, because there won't be Nancy Pelosi blocking the hearings. Oh, and by the way, let's not even discuss how insider trading, which is illegal for everyone and should be, is completely legal. By the way, did anyone ever ask Nancy Pelosi, how did you and your husband make $140 million? Just curious. Selling orange juice in front of the Capitol? How does that happen? And no one's even curious about it. Wow. Yeah, she said, well, I'm saying well. Now we're going to go to a clip. We're going to do two clips. This is the top big pharma people making the vaccines coming before a special committee of the European Union, and they're being grilled about, you've given us bad product that doesn't work, and yet you wanted to be, make sure you were identified. Now think of that for a moment. In every country in the world where these vaccines were given, the governments had to sign a contract completely identifying the manufacturer. So if you made a bad vaccine and people died, too bad, you have to sue the government. And in some cases, especially in South America, the government said, we don't have that kind of money if something goes wrong. Well, then give us your national sovereign assets. What do you mean? Well, if you have reserve currencies in a foreign bank, if you have ships, airplanes, we want that as collateral. Wow. This should have raised every ethical flag in America. It raised none. So we raise them. They raise them. And look to the response, because we're going to respond to their response. If this is how capable the top executives making hundreds of billions of dollars are, wow, then you should have put Alfred E. Newman as running one of these companies. Let's go to the clips from the European Union.
Somebody lied, and I want to know who. Since I do not consider you to be stupid, you must have known that your vaccine is basically worthless at best, potentially harmful at worst. So my question is, did you lie to the EU Commission and governments around the world so they would spend billions and billions of taxpayers' money? Who lied? Just answer me that question, please.
And let me just finish by saying that I do believe that today there is enough data that that we can look.
Répondez à cette question. All due respect, it's an important issue, and the reason why they are here is to answer questions. Yes. And I see that they are all avoiding answering concrete questions from my colleagues.
Thank you very much. The question is for both of them. When these vaccines became available, we were promised it would prevent contraction and transmission of COVID-19. All governments around the world, EU Commission, everyone, basically repeated that, began harassing and intimidating people so they would take that promised game changer. Well, it turns out it was fake news, wasn't it? Somebody lied, and I want to know who lied. Since I do not consider you to be stupid, you must have known that your vaccine is basically worthless at best, potentially harmful at worst. So my question is, did you lie to the EU Commission and governments around the world so they would spend billions and billions of taxpayers' money and buy your worthless stuff? Or did you tell the EU Commission and other governments around the world the truth about your worthless vaccines and the governments lied to their citizens? Who lied? Just answer me that question, please. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you again. Yes, there are a lot of questions, so let me try to address all of them. So let me start first. We learned a lot during the COVID-19, and I think it's really encouraging to see the vaccine technology revolution actually happening due to the COVID-19. In AstraZeneca, definitely, we are looking how to leverage on that as well. There are a number of questions that are related to the adverse events and the safety. So let me maybe go back to that. So when you are vaccinating billions of people, are clearly showing that the probability of the thrombocytosis with thrombocytopenia, which is a rare side effect that you are mentioning, is has a lower incidence than the patients who are vaccinated than those who are infected by COVID after second vaccination. So I think that can provide or give you context what are we talking about when we are referring to the regulators, World Health Organization, and other bodies that are saying that the safety profile is acceptable, and that definitely means, and that is the standard term that is used, that the benefit of the vaccination outweighs the risk. That is the main way how the risk-benefit ratio of the vaccines is.
Everything you just heard is a lie. Provable lie. By the way, since this was just recent, was she not aware that the World Health Organization is now recommending children and young people not get the vaccine? They don't need it? Why don't the people in the school system of California and New York understand that? If you're following the science and you believe the World Health Organization, then that means you're putting children at risk, young people at risk, of not some rare condition, but a rampant amount of heart disease and the self-organizing lipid nanoparticles that are forming these long, stringy, rubber band-like clots in the veins. One mortician said of 700 people he's embalmed, 85% had their blocked arteries. He couldn't put embalming formaldehyde in their veins because the veins were clogged with this, and that's what's causing the death of so many people. But now let's go to the science. One of the things they said in a part two of this is that the Lancet shows that 20 million lives were saved. Lie again. Here to give us the details specifically, Richard Gale. Richard, start with the Lancet that it cannot and should not be accepted on their word that 20 million people's lives were saved because of vaccination.
Yeah, okay, Gary. So, this Lancet paper just came out in, it was middle of last year, I think it was September 2022, and they came out of the Imperial College of London. It was surprising when I actually looked at the study itself. It's only like a page and a half long, which is utterly ridiculous. I mean, you and I, we've looked at so many peer-reviewed articles, and there'll be dozens of pages of some of these studies. This is like a page and a half. It was a mathematical model. They just basically what they did, they just collected data from the official health agencies in 185 countries. It's just put through the mathematical modeling, and nobody really knows the accuracy of most of these reporting systems in within 185 countries, no less. The majority, like our system bears, are passive systems, meaning that there's no necessary compliance or obligation to even report for doctors or hospitals or clinics to even report anything into it. It's how do you compare countries in Africa with very different temperate climates and rates of respiratory infectious diseases compared to countries in colder climates. What I think was one of the major takeaways on this, just the fact that this is a mathematical modeling system based on faulty data is enough to discredit it. But more important, I think, was who funded this. It was funded by the Rhodes Trust, and we remember Cecil Rhodes, and Gavi, which is the, Bill Gates funded vaccine program, the Vaccine Alliance, which is an offshoot of Gavi and Bill Gates, the Bill Gates Foundation itself, National Institute of Health Research, the UK's British Medical Research Council. These are all pharmaceutical-based grant givers. The conflicts of interest among the authors include Glaxo, the World Health Organization, the Global Fund. One of the authors of the paper was on Moderna's advisory board. Another one was on what's the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness. That's this kind of faux, secretive group connected of consultants connected with the World Health Organization. And then two other authors were also sitting on various COVID working groups at the World Health Organization. So this was strictly, there was no independence whatsoever to this paper published in The Lancet. It should just not be given any credibility whatsoever.
Okay, two quick things. The Imperial College, wasn't that where the very first COVID mathematical model originated, which predicted gigantic deaths around the world? And wasn't it the fear of those deaths that caused all the countries except Sweden to do the lockdowns, which then caused death from the lockdowns, but was proven that the mathematical model that the whole world was using, including CDC, the World Health Organization, was completely, totally failed? It was garbage.
We're seeing most of the research, the junk science coming out from the British health agencies coming out of Imperial College London, even more so than Oxford. Also, Oxford has been, because they're aligned with the AstraZeneca vaccine.
So is this also okay? Is this also the same Lancet that Anthony Fauci managed to convince a group of his patron, people that where he's the patron, to write a letter saying this couldn't have come from a laboratory, had to come from nature? But then 3 days before they wrote that they had a late night call that now the House members have minutes of the calls, and showing that they said, this came from a laboratory, not nature. And then suddenly millions and millions of dollars went to these people, and now they're all writing, this couldn't come from a lab. And this was in The Lancet, was it not?
The Lancet is completely compromised now.
Totally.
It's degenerated. Unlike the British Medical Journal, because this was just another, very at the end of last year, BMJ, they published a paper that came from the Drug Safety Research Unit in the UK. I believe it's connected with the University of Sheffield. But they were looking at the myocarditis, and, you know, they reported it rather accurately. You know, they were stating 62% of men under 40 who were getting it, and 41% of the cases of the myocarditis come after the second dose. So this independent research coming from the University of Sheffield is actually corroborating what we are getting from Freedom of Information Acts and leaks of the documentation from Pfizer's trials and leaked emails.
Richard, real quick, because we're running out of time here, Richard. Do you have the statistics for the latest deaths, including the insurance actuaries, which are the most accurate in the world because they actually pay out based upon actual death versus the Veris system, which is totally corrupt and been totally compromised? Do you have the latest statistics?
Well, if you're referring to the it's called the Phyllis, with a PH, the Phyllis Technologies.
Give us the figures, please. Just the figures.
Okay. Yeah, so that report estimated that it was 25 points. Now, this is just for American figures.
Just right? America, everyone. Listen to what we're saying.
This is just
America.
Right. So 25.6 million injured. Obviously, 18% of all injured, 18% of those are mild or moderate injuries, but 1.36 million disabled and 300,000 deaths. The total cost to the U.S. economy due to these damages is $147 billion.
Okay, let's just stop right there for a moment. I want people to call in 888-874-4888 and share their thoughts. So 14 million injured Americans. Many of those injured have long COVID. We were told that COVID would, the spike protein would dissolve in a matter of days. No, some people still have it in them 2 years later. We were told that everyone needed it. Now, no. All over the world, people are saying stop the vaccines. With each vaccine, with each booster, you increase your chance of death the following year by 7%. So think of the people that have had 3 and 4. You just knocked about, and I gave this statistic on Friday, 25 years off your lifespan. I repeat, 25 years with those vaccines. And all those deaths, a minimum of 300,000 people dead in the United States, and yet not a single criticism from a single media anywhere in the United States.
So, I would also just make a point also, just that in that study, this is the Ed Dowd study, actually. So, but based looking at the data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, since 2021, there has been a 25% rise in disability. So that's 1.3 million people there.
And isn't it interesting? You haven't seen 60 Minutes, 2020, Dateline, Nightline, any of the major shows have on medical doctors and nurses who themselves were injured from the vaccines, because they have medical credibility. They're in the field and they know their own health, and we have. And they're not allowing anyone who's been harmed to have a form. So they continue to pretend that, oh, it's safe and effective. It's neither safe nor effective. It's the largest mass medical fraud in world history. And we're just beginning it. Now, you're going to see so many deaths and injuries permanent because of the time it takes for those self-organizing nanolipid particles to create these in veins, arteries, the graphene, cutting into the minor circulatory systems, causing clotting. We're seeing so much bad, and yet no one has acknowledged a single thing they've done wrong. Richard Gell, thank you very much.
Okay.
I'm looking at the clock. We're out of time. So think on these things. I'm taking you behind the scenes. I'm showing you what's really going on, who's responsible, naming names, departments, and all this is completely prima facie provable, because we have their emails and you hear them lie in front of Congress. I didn't know. I don't think that's a bad thing. Oh, you mean threatening every single person working at every single major platform that, you know, the heavy hand of the government's going to come in? That's not a threat. No, I don't think that's a threat. Yeah. Yeah. And you will never have heard this had it not been for this new freedom to have these committees. And this is just the beginning. You're going to see more lawsuits over the next 3 years than all the lawsuits of the last 50 years combined. Because these people who were injured permanently and those who died, their families, they're going to be suing. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening. Listen tonight, 7 o'clock. Going to be a really scorching show. Now you, Trees, lead.